All right, what is going on, everybody? Welcome back to SaberSims DFS Office Hours. It is Friday, May 6th of 2020. Listening to this as the podcast version. We have a podcast version of this show that is now up at least on Spotify. We should be rolling that out to other platforms. I think Apple and Google Podcasts as well. Hopefully within the next couple of days, I think the podcast is pretty much ready to go. We're just waiting on the review and the publishing by the site. So hopefully that goes out soon. So a hello to everybody consuming this show here, I guess, in all the different ways that you can now. If this is your first time watching or listening to this, my name is Jordan. I'm the head coach here at SaberSim. And this show is an open Q&A style stream where I answer questions from the SaberSim community about SaberSim, about DFS, whatever you guys want to talk about. So the questions come in, we get questions emailed to us, support@sabersim.com. We get questions submitted live in YouTube chat during the stream, and we get questions submitted to our Office Hours channel in our Slack community as well. There is a link to join that community in the description of every past Office Hours video on YouTube and on the podcast version of the show. So if you haven't already joined Slack, definitely recommend joining up there. That's probably the best route to getting your questions answered on this show is by asking them in Slack. Of course, you'll get access to the community at large, all of the conversations going on in there, along with our sim alerts. So you'll get notifications when new sims run on SaberSim and our free prop bets that we post every single day. Definitely a good idea to get signed up there as well. If you are by chance watching or listening to the recording of this as well, there are always timestamps in the description as well. If you want to bounce around, maybe don't have time to listen to the whole stream and want to bounce around and listen to your favorite segments or something that sounds interesting to you, check out the timestamps in the description. But for my crew watching live, let's get into it here and start answering some questions. A couple interesting ones in the queue here for today. One question about how the Sims handled injured players, which is an interesting one, especially with Joel Embiid looking maybe a little bit closer to questionable here on tonight's two-game slate. And also a couple questions here, or at least one question about just overall preparing for a baseball slate. What the process of kind of getting ready for a slate looks like, what are some interesting things to dive into here. So I think that's actually where we're going to start. We have a 13-game slate on tap tonight. So let me get this question pulled up and we'll start there. This is from average Call of Duty player here. Let me read the question. And he said, new to MLB, still learning. I know how to break down a big NBA slate. How do you break down slash attack a big 13-game MLB slate using SaberSim? Good question. So I think a lot of this is going to depend on how much time you have to commit to looking at the slate. I will definitely say that, you know, there are situations where I don't have a lot of time to do, you know, research or to review the slate or prepare. And there's certain things that I'll want to make sure that I get to when that's the case. There are other times where I have a lot of time to prepare or research or do a longer kind of version of the process here. And I'll talk about some of the things that I do when I have a little bit more time. So I guess the very first thing, you know, the very first thing I'm interested in when I'm sitting down to build lineups for a baseball slate is the weather. And actually, today's a really good example for that. I like to use Kevin Roth's Roto Grinders dashboard here for the weather. Unique thing with baseball here, and especially today is a really good example of this, but weather concerns can really affect the slate, right? We'll have games that, you know, just straight up aren't going to get played because they're postponed. We have three of those today. There's also games that maybe have certain risk of postponement after the slate locks or right before lock. Games can have rain delay issues for starting pitchers. If a game gets delayed halfway through and it's a long delay, a lot of times starting pitchers won't come back out. So as a way to just first look at the slate, I almost always recommend going into this dashboard here and just taking a look at what the slate looks like. And it's going to be a big factor tonight. Three games postponed already, which actually a postponement, I think, generally makes things a little bit easier because now you just know you don't even have to worry about that game. This Cincinnati game is not on the main slate. So of definite concern here, if you're playing the all-day slate or maybe if there's a turbo or a showdown for this game where there's some rain concern, but it looks like really two games in particular have some main slate weather issues. So the Baltimore game, the Cleveland game, just things to keep an eye on. And as the slate goes along, or as lock gets closer, have to make some decisions on if you want to play guys from this game. A lot of times, and I don't mean for this question to be a whole just analysis of just how I use this dashboard, but a lot of times is if the game is orange or worse on this color ranking that Kevin Roth uses, I will just fade it. If you have a little bit more time, you can do a little bit more research on it if you want to play that game. And it depends a little bit on if there's good players from that game, period. But I think good first thing to look into, you're trying to research a slate, take a look at the weather. Another thing that I will like to do to familiarize myself with just what the slate looks like is to look at what the Vegas implied totals look like for each team on the slate. And for that, I actually like to use the Fantasy Labs dashboard. We have these team totals here on SaberSim as well, which are really useful, a good way to figure out, you know, how SaberSim is projecting these games. A lot of times they'll be pretty close to what Vegas has anyway, but I often like to just kind of see, you know, what do I think the field is going to perceive as the best stacks on the slate? And a very easy way to do that is this Fantasy Labs MLB Vegas dashboard. I like the presentation that they have here. I think it's just very easy to see this on a quick glance. And if you just click this implied live, you can get an idea of, you know, what are the highest implied team totals on the slates. This does not always mean that these are going to be the chalkiest stacks, because DFS is a pricing game too, right? You have to pay a certain salary to roster players from a certain team. But at least, especially this year with how soft DFS pricing has been, you can basically stack anybody you want to. And I think in general, it's a pretty decent rule of thumb that the most chalky stacks will be in about the order of the implied live totals in descending order. I always get those mixed up in my head. And also kind of by magnitude too. So you can kind of group these here. Like, I think it's probably safe to say, you know, just as an initial impression, that the Angels are likely to be the chalkiest stack, and then maybe a small drop off before you get to Boston and Houston, and then maybe another drop off and so on. I also like to look at situations where the implied total has changed by a half run or more throughout the day, just because I think that can give you a little indication of maybe, you know, sometimes if there's something that the model might be missing. In this case, we are right on with where Baltimore is now, so not super concerned with that. But also just maybe, you know, maybe a game situation has changed, maybe a starting pitcher in the game has changed, or just that the public perceives a team to be far better than what Vegas's opening lines were. I think that can just be useful information as well here. But I also will sometimes sort this the opposite direction to get an idea of what maybe some of the chalkier pitchers are going to be. So, you know, you can see Gausman, Gausman, and you, Darvish, I think are interesting. And then also situations where maybe, you know, you might find maybe that chalkier SP2, or maybe a team, or maybe a situation where either a pitcher or a team is going to be a better or worse play than the projections might indicate. Like, this is an interesting one, right? The A's will be an interesting team here for me tonight to at least maybe dig into a little bit, just because the public, it is always an interesting situation to me when, there is a pitcher that, actually, I guess I'm losing track of what I was trying to say here, because Josh Winder is actually projected really well. What I was going to say is it's always a little bit weird when you have a situation where a team doesn't project that well and a pitcher doesn't project all that well, and maybe you want to be on one side of that or the other. But I guess all I'm trying to say here is I like to familiarize myself with what the field will think to be the best plays on the slate by using some of these Vegas totals. So those two things, typically just first glances, I'll take a look at both of those. That's kind of how I start to get familiarized with the slate. But as we move forward, my favorite way to figure out what I'm going to do, what my actual DFS strategy on the slate is going to be, is by running some builds. And the first one I will often do is just run a test build, default settings for the contest I'm planning on playing. So tonight, maybe it's the $4.20 max. I will legitimately just come in here. I won't touch a thing. I won't touch projections. I won't touch ownership. This is true of most sports, actually, how I prepare for almost every slate with every sport. And I will just run this and see, you know, what is the angle that SaberSim kind of wants me to take by default on this slate for this contest with making no adjustments here, right? So we'll see. And I'm genuine. This is interesting here today because I truly haven't researched this slate at all, apart from just looking at the weather. I know people were talking about the weather on Twitter here this morning, so I was interested to see what's going on there. But otherwise, I haven't researched the slate at all. So we kind of get to actually see just how I look at this live here. So But let's see what we get. Let's see what the slate's looking like. And this is for a 20 max. The one other thing that's important to note here too is that, you know, this test build will kind of give you a contest adjusted approach, right? This isn't just what are the best plays, what are the best projected plays. This is like for this contest, where's the leverage opportunities, what are the best plays. So and I'll just see what's going on here. So eating some chalk at pitcher, right? Two elite aces up top. I don't know what is going on with DraftKings pricing this year, especially on the pitching side. It really has felt like you can almost play whoever you want on most slates with pitching. It's everybody's cheap. I guess there's a couple of these unique aces that, like, when Burns or Verlander or some of these guys are on the slate, they're priced up. But like Bieber and you and these guys at 8.87 and 9.4, it's just very easy to play them with how well they project. So paying up for those aces here. And then on the stacks, getting to a lot of White Sox here, and then Minnesota, Kansas City, Washington. And I'll kind of compare this back and just see, you know, what are we doing with the chalk here, right? And you can see this is kind of the angle that SaberSim's taking you down here for tonight's slate, right? Probably eating some chalk, playing those ace pitchers in good spots. But where are our most popular stacks, right? We're leveraging on the White Sox, the Twins, Kansas City, right? All of these teams with lower implied run totals, getting to some more contrarian, lower owned stacks here. Looks like maybe another Buxton chalk night. So maybe the exception of Buxton here, but that's kind of the angle that SaberSim is taking for this particular contest. That's the first build I'll run. And then I will go ahead and run my trusty research build here. And I might, you know, if I'm really just starting off my research for that day, I might put a stack rule in here so I can do a little bit of research on stacks, right? So I'll go ahead and run this build. And this is basically the reason I run this, like especially this early, is to this build, right? This test build shows me with ownership taken into account, with all these things taken into account, what is the angle that SaberSim wants to take for this contest by default, right? What the research build tells me is kind of a raw look at the sim data. What are the teams and pitchers that are the most likely to be optimal? So I'll run this, and this will take a little bit longer to run, but we'll build this, and then I'll take a look and see, you know, is there a team that maybe I think that I want to get a little bit more exposure to? Or is there a pitcher that I want a little more exposure to? Or is there a team or a player that SaberSim is a little more comfortable playing that I actually want to fade or be on the other side of or something like that? So we'll run this here and I'll talk a little bit about what I am looking at here. But I mean, as you know, for those of you that watch this show pretty often, I think this will probably come as no surprise. But a lot of my research here, right, is more on the standpoint of like assessing what the field is going to do and then assessing what the probability of success is for different players on the slate. I'm not looking at like, you know, platoon splits or BVP or, you know, who's hot, right? Who's been hitting really well, right? This is, you know, I leave a lot of the important stuff in terms of determining, you know, what players should be projected to the Sims, and instead, you know, immediately kind of jump to strategizing and figuring out how am I going to attack the slate that is. So take a look here. You know, a lot of times interested to see if there are any, what are the best projected pitchers? What are the most likely to be optimal pitchers? And especially if there's any that have a positive leverage, right? So somebody like Merrill Kelly will often stand out to me as the fifth most likely to be optimal pitcher on the slate, right? There's a big big difference between Bieber and you, who are like 25% chance to be optimal, and then a drop off to these guys that are like 15 to 20%. But Merrill Kelly is the only guy in this range that at the moment it looks like the field will be undervaluing here, and nobody ever really seems to want to play Merrill Kelly very much. So that might be an interesting name, might be somebody that I actually kind of write down and look to get a little exposure to later when I'm actually building my lineups, if nothing else changes here. But I'll also go in and check the stacks, right? And I mean, here's what's interesting, right? Twins have a 11% chance to be optimal. It looks like Buxton, they're the most likely to be optimal. Actually, let's go to the five stacks. 10% chance to be the most optimal five stack, right? Very low implied team total. It looks like Buxton is going to be chalky. I might actually just be willing to go very heavy on Twins tonight, even eating the Buxton chalk if the rest of the lineup is pretty low owned. The White Sox were the team that was popping up in the test build quite a bit, and I don't hate that. But for a team, you know, a team that only has a 4.5% chance of being the highest owned five stack, I might look to find leverage on a different team here, like the Twins. So I'll do a little bit of comparison here to what I think are going to be the highest owned stacks and see if there are any kind of low owned opportunities there. Basically a team that, you know, on this page far outpaces their implied total is what I'm kind of looking at here. So I think Minnesota is the one that really kind of pops here at first glance. So I'm looking to see if there's any others that jump out to me, but the Twins definitely jump out, right? So I'll be interested to see how their ownership comes in. That is basically, you know, my initial first step approach is I'm looking at the weather. I want to know what games they're going to play, first of all. Then I'll take a look at Vegas and just get an idea. This is what the field thinks. This is kind of the rough average of what people think is likely to happen on the slate tonight. Then I'll run a test build, default settings for the contest, for the main contest I'm planning on playing that night, and just get an idea of, you know, left to its own devices, if I only had 5 minutes to build my lineups, what would my angle be? What would SaberSim's approach be? And then I'll run this research build to see if there's anything I'd want to kind of change to that. So let's go back to the test build here now. And like, just on, you know, I only had like 10 or so minutes of doing this. So, but just on the strength of that research alone, let's talk about maybe a few adjustments I would make here. So the first would be, I probably want to be over the field on Merrill Kelly if I had to decide right now. Maybe I'll go 2x the field because I do think it's interesting that he was a pitcher that was showing up with a decent shot at being in one of the top two pitchers on the slate, according to that build, and the only one with a positive leverage score. So I want some exposure to him. You know, maybe I'll actually even do like 30% here and try to get a little bit of an additional edge there. So I like that. And then let's go over to the team stacks here. And I actually think, you know, as of right now, I kind of want the Twins to be my most popular stack. So let's cool off the White Sox love a little bit here and see if that brings me to the Twins. Let's bring the White Sox down to 30%, and maybe I'll bring the Twins up to 40 or so. Yeah, cool. Let's do that. So just making some updates to my exposures here based on that research build, right? And all this is basically saying is, you know, I want to take a little bit of a different angle than what SaberSim was doing by default. Last thing I might do here, I'm not totally bought in on these 3-3-2 stacks yet, especially on a 13-game slate. Actually, on a 13-game slate, I think I really want to stack up. So I'm going to kill the 4-2-2 stack as well. And just play these really big correlated stacks. So, and I don't even want to play the five stack, the naked five stack. So, Brad says, does slate size change the types of stacks you want at all? Yeah, it does. I mean, like on a big slate, so anything like 10 games plus, and tonight actually might end up just being a 10 game slate instead of a 13 game slate. It might already be that or close. But on a really big slate like this, I probably don't want any more than like one uncorrelated player to the rest of the lineup in the lineup. So that's kind of the way I think about it. So a 5-2 and a 4-3 stack have one uncorrelated batter. They have one one-off. In a 5-3 stack, you have no one-offs. For those medium-sized slates, something like a 6 to a 9-game slate-ish, I would call like a medium size. I'm probably a little bit more comfortable with a... what's it called? Like two uncorrelated players. I might play more like 4-2s or be willing to play those a little bit more. For slates smaller than that, I will typically play whatever shows up. I still probably want at least a 3-man stack in a lineup. You'll occasionally see like a 2-2-2-2 pop up. I don't know if I want that. Oh yeah. Brad's reminded me that I got to jump to the corner view here so you guys can see the screen a little better. On like five or less game slates, a lot of times I don't really care about the stack sizes, period. Like the correlation slider will give you the right size stacks regardless, and I'll roll with that. But on a big slate like tonight, this is one where I am a little bit more opinionated about wanting to be on the biggest stacks. So, but that's like kind of like what my, like, I would say my most basic version of my baseball process would look like, especially in a situation where, you know, I kind of had to get things dialed in and where I wanted it in 20 or so minutes. might dive into that research build a little bit more. If I have a lot of time to kind of do my full process, a lot of times I'll pull that down into Excel and do a little bit of some leverage calculation there to see if there's anything I'm missing. But this is a good, you know, first approach of how I'd want to tackle some of this. So hopefully that helps. But and then I think actually the last thing that's worth noting here as it relates to like stuff that you really want to make sure you're doing is if you should check and see, did you build without all the lineups being out, right? Sometimes you have to. So like on a slate like tonight, you might have to build at lock and not have the Cardinals or Giants lineup because it's this late game. I think one other things you'll want to do is see, you know, do you need to keep an eye out for that lineup coming out? If you have some Giants stacks and you built without the Giants lineup, you need to be prepared to watch the news to make sure you update when that lineup actually does come out. So one other important thing to keep track of. But cool. All right. Okay, I'm going to jump over to this question. This is from GA33, and then we'll hit YouTube chat. But let's hit this one first. This is a good one, a relevant question for tonight. He said, hi, Jordan. How does Saberson handle projections for players playing through an injury? Do the Sims assume he's fully healthy or is the injury factored in? An example would be Joel Embiid thumb injury in the first round of the playoffs. Well, and also now his head injury if he plays tonight. I was bumping his projection down, but didn't know if that was already accounted for. Thanks. Good question. So this is something that there's kind of a two-sided answer here. So if we have reason to believe that for an injury reason that a player will play less minutes, that will typically be accounted for. And I think it's a good idea, you know, in that kind of situation to go check on a player's minutes projection and see if you agree, right? So, you know, let me give you an example. Let's say Embiid gets ruled in tonight, but then it comes out that he's only going to play 25 minutes max, right? That is something we will typically pick up on and handle accordingly, right? If you come over here and look at the minutes projection, you'll typically see about 25 minutes in there. If you don't, and for some reason we miss news, that's a good opportunity to make an adjustment. But most of the time, if there's like a minutes limit on a player or something like that, that will be captured correctly in the Sims. What we don't really do is make an adjustment to a player knowing that in those minutes they are still playing hurt. That is a very, very difficult thing to quantify just in general. Quantifying the impact that an injury has to a player and what that means for their production is very hard to quantify. So when we have a player's minutes projection, we are essentially assuming that player is playing healthy in those minutes, or that there's no, not even so much that they're playing healthy, but that there's no material adjustment that needs to be made to their usage or production or rates or anything like that in those minutes. If you have a read on what the adjustment that should be made there is, right, then I think it's a good idea to make that adjustment. Just be aware that that's hard, right? There's a reason we don't do that programmatically, is because that's just a hard thing to quantify. And your sample sizes are small, right? Like even if, you know, let's say Embiid plays tonight and, you know, does have a bad game in his whatever minutes he gets, it is difficult to know in that size sample size to really know on a statistical level if that was because he's playing hurt or because he had a bad game, right? Or because that was just his 30th percentile outcome. You know, two sides of the answer there is that on the minute side, we will typically make an adjustment if there's news about how much an injured player is going to play. But in the minutes that they're playing in the Sims, it's generally assumed in the simulations themselves that they're playing healthy and to make adjustments there. So a lot of times, the last note I'll make on this too is we are not so lucky to get a concrete Embiid's playing 25 minutes statement from the coach or from the team. A lot of times it's a lot cloudier than that. And a lot of times the coaches will give you a minutes limit and then they'll just blow right by it anyway. So there's kind of some variance there anyway as well. But good question there. And let me know if that helps. That's a really good one. So, cool. All right. Don said, just saw Saberson took down the 150K MLB squeeze. Yeah, that was Matt. the man himself took down the FanDuel flagship GPP last night. Cool 30K in the pocket. So congrats to Matt. Anthony says, do I have a Twitter handle? Yeah, it's at Jordan M. Chand, if you want to follow me. I tweet on occasion. I've tried to get a little bit more active about tweeting more about DFS and sports relevant things. When I think something's funny to share, I'll try to post it there. But I am on Twitter. And then Anthony said, I have an NBA Showdown related question. Last Milwaukee versus Boston game, I could not get the top scoring lineup to come up in the Sims as much as possible. Also for the game before, does this have to do with my settings? Not exactly. Even for a Showdown game, even if you're building 1,500 lineups, which is the maximum you can build, there are probably several orders of magnitude more possible lineups that are even possible to make, right? 1,500 lineups. I know you'll often hear people like on social media say like, oh, 150 lineups, right? Playing 150 lineups, you can cover all the outcomes, right? That gets made fun of a lot on Twitter, right? That's not true, right? And even 1,500 lineups, even for an NBA Showdown contest, really does not cover the massive number of different lineups you can actually make, that even if you set a floor of a certain salary usage or minimum projection, right? There is probably, I wonder if like Will or anybody from the SaberSim team is watching, that they could give me a better ballpark number. But I would have to assume that for an NBA Showdown lineup on DraftKings, there has to be in the hundreds of thousands of lineups possible there. It's an immense number. So 1,500 lineups represents a small sample of that. You are not, unfortunately, going to have the optimal in your pool of 1,500 every single time you build lineups. And that is not necessarily an issue with your settings or anything like that if you don't. So, you know, if you did have the optimal in your 1,500 every single time, that would be great. But that is just not the reality. So I would focus... You know, I would focus your attentions when you're building your NBA Showdown lineups on trying to build the best, most positive EV lineups possible. And SaberSim is going to help you immensely with that, right? Already, what's happening when you build your lineups, when you build 1,500, right, assuming you want 1,500, is we're taking, let's go to a Showdown. We're taking a single game simulation for each of these, right? 1,500 sims and building the optimal lineup for that sim and printing it out, right? That's actually immense. That's very hard to do with the traditional optimizer if you think about what's actually happening there. You have to come up with the game scripts yourself. You have to say, like, these are the different game scripts that I think the way that the game could play out in, which is going to be very subject to human bias, right? A person is going to struggle to provide an unbiased view of what the actual likely game scripts for a game are. But then not only from that, you have to come up with the actual optimal lineups that represent those game scripts. Like, you have to... The lineups that you would get from a traditional optimizer building for NBA Showdown are ultimately just going to be based on average projections. And you have to kind of just hope that they represent optimals of actual game scripts, right? Well, SaberSim automates both of those. And then beyond that, we actually sort through and determine a combination of what are the most likely to be optimal lineups, right? What optimals show up most often in our sims, but then also what are the highest scoring optimal lineups when those game outcomes come into play. Right, that's what your final pool of lineups actually represents when you're building NBA DFS lineups. So with SaberSim, and that's a lot of that heavy lifting is automated for you. So what I would focus on spending your time from there is opportunities to add value by making updates to projections for situations that are hard to model, like the Joel Embiid situation tonight. Right, if you have a read based on your own research of how that situation is going to be handled when it comes time to build lineups for the slate, making an adjustment there can be a good way to add value. One of my favorite ways to make adjustments to add value to NBA Showdown is to look for ways to differentiate, especially in these playoff slates where you're going to be playing bigger contests. These contests are a lot bigger than what you'd get for regular season NBA. You know, figuring out what are going to be the most common constructions, what are going to be the most common captains used, what are going to be the most common, you know, actual constructions on a slate like this, right, where the total is probably, you know, very close to a pick'em. One construction that I think people are unlikely to use or undervalue is a 5-1 stack, right? Or even a 4-2, but probably more the 5-1, right? playing these super unbalanced builds in a game with a relatively low spread is a way to get a little bit different. And, you know, combining that with maybe capping some of your exposure to some of the chalkier captains, I think can be another way to get different. So, but anyway, to the original question here, you shouldn't necessarily have the expectation that you're going to have the optimal in your 1500 pool anytime you're building for any contest, just because the number of actual lineups that you can make far outweigh 1500. Now, our goal with SaberSim would be that the optimal lineup or a bink score lineup is in your pool of 1500 more often than it just mathematically kind of would be otherwise, right? Like let's say the entire pool of actual lineups you could build for a slate was 15,000, just as an example, right? Our goal for the 1500 lineup pool is not that every single slate you have the highest scoring lineup in that pool of 1500, but that you have that lineup in your 1500 more than 10% of the time. That more often than what the average expectation of how likely a random 1500 lineup pool would have the highest scoring lineup of a 15,000 possible lineup set, that highest scoring lineup shows up in there, if that makes sense. So, but. Cool. Let's see. We keep going here. Patrick said, when playing Showdown on FanDuel, how do I lock certain players in MVP, star, or pro in their respective spot when making a build? I can lock utility players. You will have to do that after the build. FanDuel just kind of makes the data side of this difficult because it's a little bit kind of getting into the weeds here, but basically FanDuel uses the same player ID for a player, whether they're used in the utility spot, the pro spot, the star, or the MVP, which makes that on our end, the optimization kind of weird of locking a player into a particular lineup position. It's not an insurmountable problem, but it just is a little bit tricky for us at the moment. Let me refresh this to get this to pull up here. So what you should do instead here is what I would do is build a big pool to work with here. So 1500 pool size, just so you have plenty of lineups in your pool to work with. And then if you want to lock players into particular positions, do it here in step three. So, if you want, Harden locked into the star or something like that, you can do that here this way. And that will be the easiest way to do that. So. Jared said, how much randomness is too much for MMEing MLB? I understand the variance, but wondered your thoughts. So it's interesting, right? So on like the practical side, I like playing really diversified portfolios of lineups. So I don't even hate necessarily, I don't even necessarily hate being up here at very high variance settings to diversify, right? I think one of the best ways to diversify your pool further is to increase your sim variance slider. With that said, because that will like widen up your range of outcomes to looking at single game sims for every game, you can get some weird lineups sometimes. Like the higher your sim variance slider goes, the stranger your lineups can get because every lineup is just using a single game sim and weird things can happen in single games, right? And you may not actually need that much precision to bink a contest. So I don't mind cranking up your sim variance slider, but if you're going to do that, I do think it makes sense to maybe put some other guardrails into your process at other sections here to make sure you're getting lineups that you want. So like if you're going to crank the sim variance slider up to 10, and you have an opinion on what size stacks you want, you might be better served setting a stacking rule along with that since your sim variance slider is going to be so high. Min salary is another good one, right? If you turned min salary off to zero, right? And then you built lineups at sim variance 5, because that's using a bucket of simulations to build each lineup, you're typically going to get a lot of lineups that are generally pretty close to the max salary. If you turn sim variance up to 10, right, the likelihood that the optimal lineup for a single slate simulation is not even close to the max salary, like that's going to happen sometimes. And you might see some lineups that have a really low min salary at sim variance 10. So you might want to, you know, I think the default value here is actually just 49,000. So maybe you just leave that there, but that's another thing to pay attention to. But I turn my sim variance slider up fairly frequently for baseball, just because, especially if I'm building 150, a lot of times I want that pool to be really diversified. So Brad said, Jordan, speaking of showdowns, I feel I have better luck or better runs when certain teams compared to another. Do you feel SaberSim is more on one team? I don't think so. I think that's probably just like kind of random. Some variance there. I don't think there are situations where we might have like a team bias. But I think it's probably more likely that like in the sample sizes we're talking about here, it's probably just kind of more random that it just so happens that you're running a little better on those showdowns. But Anthony said, when I click on a player and I see that graph of percentage outcomes, is there any way I can see the outcomes for a blowout? Like Miami showdown game for today, that could be a blowout. So there's no way to isolate like this graph for a subset of sims, right? Like this, there's no way to see, you know, show me only Luca's ranges of outcomes when Dallas wins by, just as an example, I know this wasn't your example, but when Dallas wins by 10 or more or something like that. But it is important to remember that because each simulation is essentially a game script, that will be captured naturally in your lineups anyway. So if you build lineups for, let's actually use the Miami game, right? So these lineups that you're building for the Miami-Philly game, right? There will be lineups in the pool here that are blowout game scripts in proportion to the rate at which those game scripts actually happen in the Sims, right? And that's actually kind of what that's probably what I'm kind of, the game script that I'm kind of tackling here or trying to jump at with these five stacks, right? Is basically probably things that resemble more of a blowout game script. And I like to do that when the spread is close. When the spread is close on these games, I will like to diversify by playing these lineups that have this, have a lineup construction that I don't think is in line with of what the field thinks is actually going to happen. And let's say if Embiid gets ruled back out and the spread grows, and maybe I don't think Miami's going to be too favored tonight, even with Embiid out. But let's say it was like maybe a 6.5 point spread, even. I'm not a very good odds maker, but maybe it was something like that. I would actually probably be more in favor than at that point of playing more heavyweight Philly stacks for an NBA showdown for tonight, just to differentiate. But that's just my strategy. But anyway, for the question here, there's not really a way to isolate those player ranges of outcomes for certain game scripts. But remember that those game scripts naturally show up in your lineups at the rate at which those events happen in the Sims. And if you want to build purely for a blowout situation, you can make these. You can make adjustments to the team totals, right? So if you want to particularly tackle, like if you want to say, I want to build for an event, you know, where Philly loses and gets blown out, you know, if you set it to something here, right, you can kind of push the builder in that direction of saying, you know, use the game outcomes where the mean score for the Heat is 110 and the mean score for the Sixers is 98, and now build those lineups. So, but another good question there. Mike says, what are the best sliders, or what do you prefer if I'm playing in a $12 five entry max, 294 people, and a $10 single entry with 500 people? Well, the second one's easy. So, I mean, I guess I'll preface this by saying I recommend sticking to the defaults for the sliders. I assume this is on FanDuel. This sounds like FanDuel, but I could be wrong. I recommend sticking to the defaults in general, right? These default sliders are back-tested. We've put a lot of work into putting these where they're at. And if you're looking just in general, what are the best sliders for this contest? They are very likely the default sliders for that contest. So single entry, 500, I'd be right here. GPP, single entry, 500. Five entry max, we don't have a particular slider setting for, so I would probably just use the three max. The overall strategies that will make you successful in a five entry max are going to be very close to what makes you successful in a three entry max. And actually, in this case, the sliders don't change. So overall, a lot of times these like 1-7 lineup type contests all play pretty similarly, and the sliders will generally be pretty close for them. So I would build something. I would build with something resembling these settings for both contests. So HC said three games postponed now. Guardians, Jays. Brad said at least they're doing it early. Yeah, I prefer that. Definitely prefer that. Makes it easy. So yeah, there you go. So now it'll really end up just being this one here. But it's crazy. It's raining all over today. Anthony said earlier, I'm not going to bug you, but you should know I want to. I wonder what that means. Are you talking about on Twitter? You can bug me on Twitter. That's great. All engagement is good engagement. Cool. Patrick said, is there a glitch for FanDuel around 2 or 3 for PGA? I noticed weekend golf player pool shows up. I don't know. I'll take a quick look. I know we were having some issues with this yesterday. I think Chris is looking into this and said that if you do a hard refresh, it can get it to show up. But yeah, it looks like something a little funky is going on there. So we can look. We can look into that. Not sure what's going on there. So. All right, cool. I don't see any other questions here. If anybody else has any other questions for me, go ahead and fire away now. I will start to begin wrapping us up and mention that, of course, if this is your first time watching this or you otherwise don't have a SaberSim subscription already and want to check us out, we have a free 7-day trial on our site, sabersim.com. You can come check us out. No strings attached. Sign up for 7 days on Fridays. I think it's always the best time to sign up just because you'll get access to baseball and weekend baseball and basketball here too. Playoff hockey, but also all the DFS sports that happen on the weekends. MMA, Formula One is back this week. Should be a pretty fun race in Miami. Should have a NASCAR race, I imagine, here this week as well. All kinds of stuff here to play DFS for this weekend. And we have full support for all of these sports, full simulation support. So you can get started pretty easily there. If you are watching this and you were once a SaberSim subscriber and maybe used up that trial and you're interested in just coming back, we reset everybody's trial at the start of baseball season as well. So good thing to mention here. But if you've tried us before and want to come back and give it another try, we've made a lot of improvements since you've probably last seen the app. So definitely check that out. Otherwise, we will be right back here again on Monday, 2 p.m. Eastern. I know we started a little bit later here today, but on Monday, we'll be back at 2 p.m. Eastern for another stream. Before we go, Mike said, is there a group chat for members to talk sports? There is. So in the actually, you know what? Maybe I'll just send you a link. I'll show you where to find it, first of all. So on our YouTube channel, so all of the past Office Hours videos will be on our YouTube, right, in this playlist down here called Catch Up on the Latest Office Hours Live Streams. So if you want to watch any of these past ones, if you click any of these, and then in the description, there will be a link to join right here. So let me actually, I'll just pop this right here. That should work. I just popped it into the chat here. But if you want to go dig it up, it's in the description of every past video. And it will be in the description of this video once this stream becomes a video and stops being a stream here. But Jared said, one last question. When running stacks, can you set up rules to force stacks to ensure the stacks are relatively tight? I assume you mean like batting order gaps. Is that what you're referring to in terms of tight stacks? I assume that's what you mean. So we don't have a specific like gap. I know some other optimizers out there have like a gap setting for no more than one batting order gap in or whatever, however you want to describe it. We don't have that. What we do have, we have a couple things here. The first is you can just specify the batting order spots. So you could say like no 7, 8, 9. And then if you're building four stacks, right, pretty good chance of getting that in the right spot here. But I actually think the better answer to that question, and I know maybe it's not the one you want to hear, but with SaberSim, you really shouldn't have to do that. Right. And the reason you would have to do that on a traditional optimizer is because that tool doesn't understand correlation. Right. You are telling the tool what correlation is. You are saying, hey, I know this optimizer only knows how to optimize for average projection, but I want only five stacks. And I know that batters are more correlated to other players that are close to them in the order. So I want to make sure that those five stacks are the most correlated versions possible. Right. Well, since we have game simulations of these games, we understand these correlations at a like very precise level. So we can take, let's look at the Twins, right? Twins were popping earlier, right? And we can look at a guy like Gary Sanchez, who we project to hit fourth, surrounded by Urshela and Miranda, right? And we can pull up his correlations and actually quantify how correlated he is to other batters in the order, right? So he actually is pretty well correlated to Urshela. Decent correlation still to Miranda, but not like particularly much more correlated, right? Let's see. Let's pick another example here. Let's pick Michael Brantley, who has Altuve and Bregman, right? Same deal here, right? This is actually probably even a better example, right? Brantley is correlated to all of the Houston hitters, but his biggest correlations are to Altuve and Bregman, right? Those are the correlation values that actually get taken into account by this slider when you build lineups. So basically, you know, all things in DFS are kind of a balance, right? Yes, you want to prioritize the highest the most correlated versions of stacks, but you also probably don't want to just play 1 through 5 in every single stack you're building, right? Because there's ownership questions, there's projection issues, there's salary issues, right? There's a balance of how correlated you want your lineup to be versus everything else. That is the question that is kind of automated and handled for you dynamically by the correlation slider. So if you want to force certain stack sizes or stack types in terms of the gaps in the stack, I would either, you know, limit your player pool by removing players that you don't want in your pool at all, or by setting a stacking rule that incorporates the batting order positions, which is kind of an imperfect solution. But I do think that in general, this isn't something you really need to do when building with SaberSim because of the way that the correlation slider works. So, but good question there. And Rogue says, hey man, late to the party, are there historical videos covering NBA stacking and the basics around focusing on variations of 4-2 and 3-2-2? So stacking isn't going to be a very big factor in basketball. Especially, I mean, on these two game slates, right, like, It is really not something that I would think about as giving you an edge very much at all. Basketball correlations are pretty low, and most of the time they are negative, right? So, you know, correlations for a guy like Luka, you know, his biggest negative correlations are to the other guards on the team, but there's not very strong positive correlations in basketball in general. So most of the time, you're not going to be stacking because there are not positive correlations between players on the same team. There are not very strong correlations. There are basically just neutral correlations between players on opposing teams. So there's not really a lot of good reason to like game stack either. I would say most of the work on correlation for basketball, especially on like bigger regular season slates. Like, let me see if I can pull up like a regular season slate. Yeah, so like an 11-game slate in the regular season. When this correlation slider turns on, so you'll see, okay, yeah. So for like this slate, the default value was 5, high correlation. Basically, what that's going to do is it's going to avoid a situation where you are getting too much negative correlation by stacking too many players from the same team, right? So, you know, avoiding a situation. Let's see if there's a good value play. So it looks like this was a kind of a Cleveland value slate, right? So we have Dean Wade, Okoro, and Ed Davis, all good values for this random slate from November 17th. the correlation slider in this case will typically just help prevent you from ending up with a situation where you are playing multiple players together that are negatively correlated on a team. So I wouldn't worry too much about your stack sizing in NBA. I think most of the time for me, at most, I will set a rule to avoid more than three-ish players from the same team. But that's only for regular season main slates. At this point in the season, I am basically ignoring correlation. I don't think on a two-game slate, it's a very important factor. You are generally to take down one of these playoff slates, mostly what you're going to have to do is come up with that optimal or very close to that optimal. And we can accomplish that with a combination of looking at very small numbers of simulations, having a very high ownership fade, and just ignoring correlation. So, and it's because those correlation factors are just very low in the sport. And the reason why the correlation factors are low, just taking that one step further, is that because basketball is not a very event-focused sport. There is not a singular play where a player can do something on the court and score a significant amount of their fantasy points along with another player on the team, right? In football, if the quarterback throws a touchdown to the wide receiver, right, that will be kind of a splash moment for that player's points, where both the wide receiver and the quarterback score together and score a lot of their mean projection all in one play. Same thing with baseball, right? A grand slam. If you take kind of every element of a grand slam, right? And there's other reasons baseball is correlated. This is just one of them. But if you take kind of every element of a grand slam, you have three players that did something to get on base, scored for that. And then the guy that hits the home run, everybody scores and you get the points from the home run hitter and everybody scores at once and they score a big percentage of their mean points, right? All at once. There's nothing Luka can do on the basketball court tonight to score half of his mean projection all in one play. And certainly nothing he can do to have that happen alongside some other player scoring 20 points at the same time, which is basically what happens when there's a touchdown is scored in football. So anyway, but Rogue said, there went my last 2 hours of looking over past contests and what winners had. Makes sense now. Thank you. I was using them as a way to spread exposure across games. Gotcha. Yeah. I apologize that I couldn't get you an answer before that, I guess. If you're looking, I would say if you're looking at constructions for basketball, you are probably, it's just going to be like pure noise in terms of like what constructions sharp players have. With that said, I do think if you studied regular season main slate NBA lineups from sharp NBA DFS players, you will see that with exceptions for when a situation where there's a team that is just like a super good value, like a slate where the Bucks are on it, where Giannis, Drew, and Middleton are all out, and every single player on the team is projected for like 8x, with the exception of that kind of slate, and maybe even including that kind of slate, you'll typically see, I think most sharp players will probably not have more than three or so players from the same team. That is to limit those big stacking negative correlations, right? Because players are negatively correlated, each player more that you have on the team kind of makes it even worse. So you'll see that. But otherwise, I think it's kind of just pure randomness in terms of what stack sizes you get. So, and one thing you can do too, before we kind of move on here, and one way that I like to use, I think you can use SaberSim to help answer some of these questions for you sometimes. So let's jump back to that November 17th slate. And I think this is an underrated use of SaberSim. Right. So again, it's with a research build. Right. So this isn't perfect, but what we can do is we can basically say, hey, SaberSim, simulate out this November 17th 11 game main slate 1500 times. Right. That's what this build does. And let's remove this rule so it doesn't limit it there. Right. This is going to be a single game simulation of every game on the slate 1500 times. And we can build this. And then go look at what the constructions you get are from this slate, right? And see what... Now, you don't actually need the... You probably don't need the optimal to take down a GPP for an 11-game NBA slate. But we can see, you know, and use this as a tool of, like, what do the optimals actually look like? What stack constructions do we actually get here? And I think this can be useful. You got to be careful with this sometimes too. If you do this for MLB, this might lead you down the path of thinking that stacking is bad. You got to be careful with that kind of thing. But I think as a tool of like, you know, getting familiar with what types of lineups can be optimal can be a good way to answer this question. And when I'm curious what we'll get out of this. So we can see it, right? So, you know, for the most part, it's unlikely that a lineup with more than three players from the same team is optimal for this 11-game slate. Looks like there's two lineups in our 1500 set where there happens to be a four stack. So Rogue said, those two stack had a 70% win rates over all of the jukebox GPPs of the playoffs, hence my wrong thinking. Yeah, and some of that too, you know, that kind of analysis gets tricky too, because you also have the question of like adjusting for how often that lineup is played. Like, is that lineup winning more often than it's played, right? If it's in 80% of lineups and it's only winning 70% of the time, it's actually probably underweight. But yeah, I wouldn't sweat for these two game NBA slates. I pretty much wouldn't sweat construction at all. I haven't been. I basically just ignore it. At this point, I think maybe at the three game slates, there was a little bit of an argument to be made that was still kind of worth, you know, thinking about how big of a stack can you make that is still profitable. But on a two game slate, at least there's four teams, right? You're going to have, especially on FanDuel, you've got nine guys. You're gonna have stacks. So cool. All right. Good way to bring us home there. Had a few other questions come in. So got us right to that hour mark. We'll go ahead and leave it there for today. Again, enjoy your weekend. We'll be right back here again on Monday, 2 p.m. Eastern. One more question from Carol here. MMA question. How often do Sims run? Weigh-in results just in and two fighters miss weight. So they will run no later than sometime tomorrow morning. Basically, it's kind of a manual process at the moment. So we'll run initial sims, and then Will and kind of the rest of the models team will generally keep an eye on Vegas movement, basically. And if there's significant line movement, it doesn't even have to be for a fighter missing weight. Even if there's just like a ton of sharp money coming in on a fighter and the lines have changed for fights, we will typically rerun for that. And I know Will's kind of final MMA sim will run typically Saturday mornings. And he will post most of the time in the channel that the kind of final sim has run. And if there happens to be one other piece of news that comes out that impacts line movement for MMA, we'll run it again. But typically, you know, if it's an hour or two before lock for MMA, it's probably very likely that those are the final sims. Obviously fights can get canceled. If fights get canceled, we'll mark those players out and rebuild ownership, but that typically doesn't affect the rest of the fights. So we won't, like, things won't resim from there because the other fights are still what they are. I would say, it's a little bit of a manual process. Final sim runs typically Saturday morning, most of the time. Cool. Call it there. Take care, everybody. Good luck this weekend. Have fun this weekend, whatever you got going on, and I'll see you on Monday. See ya.